Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Listening Show, a show you can listen to, established in 2020 with hosts Walter and Zach. I won't tell you which one I am. Take your least favorite and just attribute it to Walter. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, that's nice. You're going to leave the favorite for me, for them to attribute?
I was totally on board with my little mind game, and then as soon as you jumped in, my brain had that. Have you seen this YouTube video? It went around lately called, I think it's called brain aneurysm.
Oh, no.
It's just, it's a joke. It's like a fart noise on a brain. That's all it is.
Really? On a brain?
I can't explain it. But anyway, my brain just pulled a fart. That's the moral of the story. It's like 2 seconds, not even 2 seconds.
It'd be great if like you could, because now we have a TV. It'd be great if we could pull up stuff that we could talk about.
Pull that shit up, me.
Yeah, pull that shit up, Jamie. And then you could pull that shit up, Jamie, on this and we could watch it on the show.
Maybe.
You think so? You think it's possible?
Yeah, at some point it'd be worth it. I mean, two things. For one, like it's The Listening Show, but I wanted to show you a sound. It would be worth for the audience pulling up that sound.
Yeah, yeah.
I was thinking about, I forgot, I don't know if it went today, but I need to go get another keyboard out of storage for when we play on The Watching Show. And if I had that one, it would be, I don't know if say possible, but it'd be a lot easier to just do this.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to set some more stuff up. But of course, we have the technology. We have just enough technology to get by. Is this making it bad?
Nope.
If it does, let me know.
I'll tell you when it starts.
You go,
I go, and then my ears bleed, and then you're like, oh, no, and then my eyes bleed, and I convulse here, and then I die, and then you're like.
And I'll go, do you mind? I'm in the middle of something right
we're
now.
We're doing a show right now, please. And then I'm just like bleeding out, and then I was my
you're
convulsing.
Always making about you.
Was my convulsing good acting?
We're talking about. Sometimes my microphone pops really bad when I move it, and it's really annoying.
And it's also really bad when I convulse and die. So and sometimes that, you know. It,
again,
you know,
you're making it all about you.
It just happens, you know, sometimes. And I'm being selfish. So
you're being so selfish.
We're just talking about things that sometimes happen. Sometimes your mic pops. Sometimes I bleed out, die, and convulsing. And a convulsing seizure fit on the couch during a
show.
You
know what? You know what? Everybody dies.
Yeah.
Well, not everybody pops their microphone. Okay, so just again,
I'm way less
about
unique.
Yourself. You think you're so special? Yeah, while you're doing that, you're over there convulsing.
You just keep going.
Convulse really quick. You think you're so special? Always making it about you.
You see, like a doctor. Doctors, we have a code, whatever, and they're bleeding out on the floor. It's like.
Is it Zach?
Again.
He's always coming in.
You're like, dying. If this wasn't my job, then if I wasn't getting paid
pay
for
me
this.
Enough for this shit.
Right. I don't know how inconvenient. And then I'm just like, I'm sorry for doing this. You know, like I'm, you know.
We try to think of a topic beforehand because we have been going off topic, which is fine. It's a format and I enjoy it. But to kind of make one. You mentioned that whole thing with the doctor, and it made me think about, what is it called? I want to say McGregor's syndrome, but I'm pretty damn sure that's very incorrect. It is the people who go to the hospital because they want attention. There's nothing wrong with them. What's that called?
Oh, I don't know, but there's...
You know what that is.
Yeah.
There's a word for it. I don't know if it's syndrome in the title, but I want to say MacGuffin for some reason. McGregor, MacGuffin?
MacGuffin? Well, isn't a MacGuffin a placeholder for a placebo?
A MacGuffin is a driving force in a plot. So the ring is kind of the MacGuffin.
I thought a MacGuffin was also a word that basically meant placebo. It's like it stands in the place of a useful thing.
Yes, a MacGuffin is between you and your goal. I don't know if the ring was a good example. So in the Star Wars Rise of Skywalker, there's constant MacGuffins. We need to get to this. We need the token to get past the blockade. We need to get the blade to reach or to read the map. Those are MacGuffins.
Yeah.
They stand in the way of your goal. So maybe it works the way a placebo. I've never heard of those two interchangeable. They're mm-hmm. similar, but.
So I wonder if this is the case, like syntax wise with the word MacGuffin, if there was a MacGuffin and a MacGuffin and a MacGuffin, would it be a McGuffin? You know, like it's like a MacGuffin inside a MacGuff. It's like MacGuff, 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 MacGuff,
Finn, 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 Finn. I think it's Finn, just
Finn, a McMuffin.
A McMuffin. Oh, I did it. I did it. I called it a McMuffin. I'm not the only person to have done that. I know film reviewers on YouTube have said that intentionally or accidentally. Sorry.
A McMuffin.
A McMcMcMcGuffin.
Are you thinking about the Red Letter Media guy?
I wasn't. I was thinking about...
I can imagine him saying that.
Just like that my character. Sources, I was thinking of EFAP. It's an acronym for something, but it's several... YouTube film commentators podcasts, and it's like several hours long, and they call I think Mahler started it. He's in one of them. Anyway, not important. What are you saying?
Oh, I was just thinking about Red Letter Media's character. What's his name?
Mr. Plinkett.
Yeah, Mr. Plinkett. I was imagining that'd be something he says. On Dundas, another McMuffin in the way. You know, like I can imagine him saying that.
This is usually called the McMuffin.
The McGuffin.
McGuffin. It's a plot device.
And where's my Hold beer? On. It's a great voice.
That's a great character.
Yeah. I've been thinking about characters, like how easy a great character is to make, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Well, how much easier than you'd think it is to make a great character.
Okay.
Here's the way I'm going to explain it. I recently discovered a show. It's called Critical Role. And it's a Dungeons and Dragons show where voice actors play Dungeons and Dragons together, and they do it very long form campaigns, like so long form. Like if each episode is 4 to 5 hours long, there's one of their campaigns. I saw an episode 138, so we're talking months, and you could watch for months and still not have seen all of the footage they've recorded. Mm-hmm. But, how Dungeons and Dragons kind of works is that you're kind of making a story and you make characters inside the story, and then you're interacting with a predetermined set of occurrences, but with you can impact what happens during them. It's sort of like a build your own story, and you get to build your own character. You get to interact sort of with the story as it's being made. It's like one of my new favorite things for sure, because it's the process of story building, basically. It's like you get to be part of it's like if you were sitting in with, you know, what's her name, the Harry Potter girl, while she was writing Harry Potter, or J.R. Tolkien while he's writing Lord of the Rings.
I was like, Emma Watson?
No,
the writer. Oh, yeah.
What's her fucking name? I can't think. Anyway, it's
J.K. Rowling.
J.K. Rowling. I know it was some Emma Watson initials. Yeah. It's like sitting with Emma Watson while J.K. Rowling was writing Harry Potter.
Yeah, kind of.
No, It's like being, it's like watching the world get built with the writers. It's just so cool. Anyway, and kind of why I was thinking it's easy to make it, or easier than you might think to make a good character, is all you really do is you have to find a couple restrictions, and I've said before, John Mayer has this saying where it's like, I tried to write a song about the universe, and it was impossible because the universe was too big. But I found that when I wrote songs about a teacup, I discovered the universe inside the teacup. And so those end up being his best songs, because he has a huge restriction on what he's going to write about. Anyway, this is sort of goes back to the other conversation we had about conservatism and how you create boundaries and it provides freedom,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, things like that. Anyway, the specific character example I was thinking of is there's one of the guy's characters. Bertrand is the character's name. On this newest campaign that they're doing, spoiler alert, but he's like this kind of boisterous big fella with a large voice, and everything he says is very charismatic, and he's a little bit oafy.
Mm-hmm.
And so like there are scenes when they're trying to sneak around, and he's like, there's one of the gals is communicating with Bertrand in her mind so that she's sending him messages like, you have to stay out of sight and give me updates. And he's, I got it. And he's talking with his head to her, and I'm sneaking around the corner. No, you don't have to give me updates every 5 seconds walking up the stairs. You know, he's like doing this great bit where he's explaining every little thing. I'm sitting down. And then 5 minutes later, I'm still sitting down, just so you know. You know, he's like letting people know all these things he's doing with his mind. Super funny character, but like, and he, you know, he has his flaws. Like, he's kind of an oaf and drunkard and stuff. But the fact that it's this, you know, they have these restrictions on him that they make him do all these things. And he just became super beloved. And something happens to him something happens to him. And I'm sad. And then, you know, I guess I revealed what happens, but he dies in the campaign.
Now you did. Yeah.
I know. He dies in the campaign, and then everyone's like, oh, but he was the best character, and everyone's sad about it. And literally, he was in three episodes, and he was gone forever. And so it's like, how could everybody like that character the best in three episodes? Just because they had, like, it wasn't that hard for that guy to do, for basically. It was just like picking a guy. You now know he's a big, oafy guy, and then he just rolled with it and kind of, I don't know. I wonder myself if I was ever to go into story building and writing like I want to do, if that's the strategy I'd have to entail, is just be like, okay, let's create what they look like, what they are, and then give them one or two general characteristics and then just see where they go, you know?
What? I don't know, but I know the game of Dungeons and Dragons isn't that everyone's thing is to roll with it because they're rolling dice.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It is.
Uh-huh. It's good that you have a show you can binge. I'm working on Red Letter Media still, which is worth doing.
Anything to say about what I said? Or are you just a joke?
Just a joke.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know anything about the show.
Well, it's not about the show. It's about the idea of character building.
Oh, right. The point was, it's really easy to make a good character. You just need two like restrictions.
Well, it's like that. It's like what I said, if you were listening.
You know... No, the story wasn't important to me. What was important is the idea that a good character is easy to write. And as soon as you said that, I thought, well, if that was the case, there'd be more good characters. But maybe both things are true. Maybe it really is easy to make a good character, and yet we have so many dumb characters and shows and stuff, which always baffles me when, I don't know, studios, companies make these films or characters that are just bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why would you make that?
I shouldn't. You're right.
So I think it's probably, I think it might be the case that, yeah, it is actually pretty easy to make a good character, but for some reason, a lot of people don't. Like Red Letter Media, a lot of dumb, bad movies, and these people making these movies think that they're good.
Mm-hmm.
And yet to the majority of people, like the audience, like myself on YouTube watching these, know that they're bad.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it is true. It is easy to make a good character.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to make a great character, but
yeah,
like,
yeah,
just generally good. That's not hard.
Mm-hmm.
Give them flaws, like the restrictions,
and
give them one or two likable qualities, and give them a place to go. And that's, I don't know, it's simple, but yeah, that's what I was thinking when you said that.
Yeah.
So it's not that I didn't have anything to say. It just was.
I think the other thing is that those people, you know. It does take, I think it actually takes two people to do a good character too, in some senses. Like, even
it
if
can help.
Well, like, for example, with the Bertrand character that I'm thinking of, the reason he played off so well is because his counterpart was so opposite. Mm-hmm. Like the counterpart, she's very organized.
That's the buddy cop. That's the straight man and the comedic relief. Like,
and she kind of accents, like, cause she's all very organized with her thoughts and like, all right, we're just going to do this, Bertrand. You turn around. He goes, bearing right. You know, and he's like, and that was like the iconic thing he kept saying is bearing right.
It's like literally, it's just, well, not literally. It's like Kronk and Yzma.
It's kind of, except for she's not evil.
I
know.
But I was about to. That's what I realized in my head when I said, "Oh, it's actually kind of."
Yeah, kind of.
You have the thinker, and then the lovable oaf, which that's
well, and
they're not exactly the same. But
people ended up. I'll quote another part because it was just so silly to me, and this is why I like that show, is because like they get put in these situations and basically kind of anything's possible. And so when you're encountering a situation, you have to be prepared for literally anything. And they've done so many of these campaigns now that they kind of have some idea of the weird stuff that the game master likes to do. And so, like, for instance, in this situation, they're tailing somebody who they suspect of crimes. And this guy, the person they're tailing, goes into a bar, and then they follow him. I'm going in. You know, no, stay outside. It's too late. I'm already gone in. And they rolled for initiative and to see how secretive they can get in there and stuff. Anyway, they get inside, and, you know, they're right behind you. And, you know, the girl turns around, like, don't look. You know, and he's being silly, and they're doing the whole things. But then eventually they lose the person, and then they're like, all right, so they're talking about, should we go check out the table or should we go try to find them? And they're like, let's check the table out. And as they're walking to the table, the girl, she starts laughing and she goes, well, what if maybe they turned invisible? Yeah, but maybe they're walking around the crowd right now. You know, they're talking about all these possibilities. Like, and then the girl goes, what if we just, she starts laughing. She goes, we just swing our arms wildly about.
Yeah, wildly around. I walked in on that part when you
did
were watching it. Yeah.
Yeah. So she's, yeah. And so she's like, and they're like, yes, we will both do that. And they're both, and you can imagine people there. And then they're talking like, oh, I'm sorry. Okay. And they get to the, you know, anyway, nothing happens. It's just the point that like your character's this, your character's this, put you together and then put you in this situation. Uh-huh. What's going to happen? And it's almost like a natural things just become. Uh-huh. Like if you put, I feel like for that reason, story writing, if I wanted to write a good story, would be easier collaboratively, because then I would say, I'm going to enact. Some people can do this in their mind. I'll give those people credit, but I'm going to enact this scene in this person's body and then in this person's body and then just see what happens. And because that seems the most, it's obviously the most natural way to create a realistic scenario. But then in realism is where you get people immersive, you know, immersion.
I have two things. Well, yeah. One thing mainly to say about that. You said you think characters are better when the two people are involved, or I think you said specifically if two people make a character. And I think that's right, at least as far as, for example, a film, the writer, director, whoever, say that's one person, and then there's the actor. Usually in those situations, mm-hmm. the actor doesn't just bring it to life, which is already half of the work. They usually add stuff,
mm-hmm.
like for example Heath Ledger and Joker, mm-hmm. added all those like iconic things that the director writer never thought of, Christopher Nolan, and it just made it what it is. So sometimes you can get better things that way. On the other side, like J.K. Rowling, man, I don't think I could do it, but write something however small or large, when you have several very different, very distinct characters and they all exist within one person.
Mm-hmm.
That seems tough.
That seems hard.
I don't know if I could do that because mm-hmm. I'm not that diverse in my mind, because you have one person's motivation, and how they act off of each other. Two people doing those two people in an improv situation, like you said, is good enough.
Yeah.
One person doing those two people is hard enough, but you have one person writing all these people and they're all interacting in a believable way. That's too tough.
You almost have to be kind of a crazy, like,
schizophrenic. That's basically what I'm saying. I'm a singular dude.
Yeah.
I don't have that many personalities in my head, but you kind of have to do that. Mm-hmm. More like, you know, Lord of the Rings, Tolkien.
Yeah.
Just crazy. And that's in addition to the story you want to tell and structure. It's insane.
Yeah, it's a lot.
All that to say, I agree, two people are better at making one character than one person would be making one character.
Yeah.
Well, more at least minds can give it more structure.
It's not really about two people making one character. It's like two people making both characters. I don't know. Like if in a scenario where there's five characters, having five characters, like whether two people, like whether one person keeps track of all five in their head, like J.K. Rowling might, or whether, you know, multiple, like two people work them all. Yeah, I don't know. Like it just, like you can kind of imagine some people can imagine multiple personalities at once in a situation and they could just write that. And now my theory is this, it's that the people who are good at it, they put the characters in a room and then they leave it alone. They don't do what they want them to do. They do, what would this character actually do? And then they try to find a way to make the story good around that, because it's like a lot of people will watch shows or they'll read books and stuff. And if they don't feel it, then my guess is that somewhere along the way, the writer forced something because they wanted the character to do something that's not what the character would do. And in some sense, you could write a story where your character subverts expectations, but it's like you were saying that one time we talked about this before, there's a difference between a character doing something that they always were going to do and making a character do something that character never would have done. It's like, no, that character would have always done this because they've always been this way. Now they hid that part of themselves. That's a better, and you can tell the difference when you're watching a movie. Mm-hmm. I think I just said like 20 different things. I was trying to get through you can tell a sincere story because you see the characters and you'd be like, yeah, that's what they would do in that situation based on what I've seen from them so far.
To add on to that, and to something I said earlier, the idea that a good character is easy to write. I think that would be true, evidenced by the fact that, like I said, a lot of people can watch something and know that that character is bad.
Mm-hmm.
If a lot of people know what makes a character bad, it would stand to reason a lot of people know what makes a character good, but maybe that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
One isn't equal to another, whatever the word is, but...
The other thing is that it's in some cases, in most cases, the people's favorite characters are like super flawed. You know, they are super distinct is maybe more accurate.
I think the word maybe it's not easy, but it's a good character is simple or can be simple.
Yeah. So
in that way, it's easy to make a good character.
Hey, this might be fun. Let's try to think of all the best characters from things that we've watched or read or.
Huh? From Aang from Avatar: The Last Airbender.
You think he's a? I was gonna say Iroh.
Oh well, shoot. I mean,
but yeah, or Zuko really?
Care, but of course Zuko. But that's like a complicated high tier character.
Yeah.
But Aang is a good character. He's simple enough.
Yeah.
Right. And he's also complicated enough to be rewarding. For example, when he kind of defied expectations in the end of the show mm-hmm. by not doing the thing that everyone was expecting to do necessarily. And I'm saying it vaguely so that you have a chance to watch it, everybody, and not be spoiled. It's absolutely worth watching.
Yeah.
At least five times.
Avatar: The Last Airbender.
But,
yeah.
That's why I chose him, because most people can understand why he's great and he's simple, but also just interesting enough. Mm-hmm. There's lots of good characters. And, give more criteria for good characters we're going to call out.
So, like, in building off of Aang, though, like, the interesting thing about him is that when you think of Aang, you think cheerful, chipper guy.
You can write down just a few character traits and get a very good outline of who he is.
But some of his best scenes are when he loses control of his anger. Like, he has, like, a rage, too. And it's manifested in part because of like his ability that he can do.
Uh-huh.
That's part of it. But the other part is that he does, like, his weakness would be that he gets angry.
Here's an example.
But he hardly ever shows it because he's naturally at default anyway.
We're kind of going down a twig. Aang is a child.
Yeah.
When he's angry, it makes sense usually. Yeah. But there are mm-hmm. situations or some episodes where it's like, why are they fighting? They're fighting just to fight. And that's when it gets annoying. It's like, they're not being reasonable or rational. They're fighting so that this can happen in the story. And when that happens, which doesn't happen often with your characters, and it happens with Aang and some others, you're like, you kind of roll your eye. Because I think I remember the first time I watched it with you, I complained when that happened. I was like, why are they, whatever.
I wish I could know what part you were talking about. Character,
you notice.
Yeah.
And it's bad.
I don't remember what you're talking. I don't know the part you're talking about.
It's probably one of those filler episodes like, oh, I can't think of it exactly. I don't know the show.
The only time I'm thinking about when they're all fighting and it's like doesn't seem like it's for a reason is when they're being chased by Azula and Ty Lee, you know, and May.
I don't know it well enough. I wasn't trying to give anything specific. I'm just saying that when there's a good character that acts out of character, you notice like why they shouldn't be doing that. He wouldn't act that way.
Mm-hmm.
And when they act within a character that makes as they should, and then a different result happens as a consequence of that, you're happy usually. Cause like, well, he did what it's like when when Zuko betrayed his uncle, then you're like, well, yeah, I'm not surprised. I guess that makes sense. That's what he would do.
I'm trying to think of other awesome characters.
More specific criteria when you say, because you said think of good characters.
I'm not talking about good people in characters. I'm talking about a character that you're like, that's a good character because I believe they are what they are, whether they're evil or good.
That's the criteria then, believable character.
Well, it's just good characters.
There's so many.
They're good for being well-written characters. It doesn't mean that they're good or evil.
I just go through every movie in my head alphabetically that I own.
Oh, gosh.
A to Z and think about the leads because they're all good.
Well, I'm thinking shows right now since we talked about Avatar. I'm thinking...
Dragon.
Attack on Titan.
Okay.
I think Aaron Yeager's a good character. I think he has his flaws, but like, and for him, it's kind of the same sort of scenario. It's like rage is his thing. He's just angry.
Well, until one season when he just mellowed out. I don't know why. The show's not over. So
right. But so far,
I may not understand all the context. The answers may not all have been revealed.
Right. But for the first three seasons, when you knew what he was and all of his issues, you were like, I believe that character.
And you could still root for him. Like he's angry and he's not skilled. He had to work hard to get the skills he needed.
Yeah.
And which is, it's really remarkable. That's why, so for example, Bryan Cranston's character, Walter White, is such a great character, because it's hard, but apparently possible, to write a disliked, unlikable person and still root for him.
Yeah.
Those are great characters.
Mm-hmm.
They're not simple. Anyway, I don't know if you want to stay on shows or cartoons.
Well, it doesn't matter what. Okay. I was just thinking, my first thought was that other show. I was thinking, what are the big shows have we watched recently? And I don't think of like kids shows when I think good characters. I was trying to think, like you said, Dr. Draken.
All I know are kids shows as far as shows, the cartoon.
Were you serious about Dr. Draken?
Yeah, he's a good character. He's amazing.
Yeah, I guess I
wouldn't
say
he's a great character.
No, I think you're right. I think he's a good character. And how you know is that you know his motivations, and they put him in funny scenarios, and you can kind of expect, you don't know exactly. He's a little bit unexpected, but that's why.
For example, and you kind of said something like this earlier, there's a trait about them you didn't know, and then that trait is revealed. You go, oh, they are within character when they do that. Dr. Drakton's an evil supervillain, hates everybody, he's just mean. And then one episode's on Christmas. Turns out Draken loves Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which throughout the rest of the episodes, that never would be revealed, and it wouldn't affect how he behaves, except on this day, that makes sense for him to act this way.
Yeah,
it's
great,
because then you put him in this situation, and it's like hilarious.
You know, another... Sorry, go ahead.
That's all.
Another thing that I really like is when sometimes characters, like the best characters, they will self-correct over time, too.
That's like what I meant by they have some place to go. Like
right. Well, and like you can tell when a character's forced for a while, but the writers can kind of, they feel as though, you know what, this character, the spirit of this character is not this, what we've been writing. And you'll watch the example I'm thinking of is Stewie Griffin from Family Guy. Like they started off and he was just angry little baby who wants to kill. He's like just homicidal. He just wants to kill people. And eventually he evolved into something else. And it's like, yeah, that's what he is. Like he couldn't be all that. And so now he's like more layered, and they changed him until he was like, yeah, that's a good character.
So gave him some more dimensions.
Right. And now I think he is a good character, because he has multiple dimensions and you know, everything he does, you're like, of course
he'd do that. The one dimension you saw in the beginning, it was him, or at least it was a part of him.
Right.
It's just, let me show you some more of what this character is.
He was a character and he became a character. Yeah.
Which is always great when you can, which I don't know if this is related, but you know how I said I want to do world building. I want to think of a bunch of rules and then tell stories in this world. And there are rules, like they are set in stone. There's a Bible, law of physics for how it works. You'll know of a few when you start watching the movies, but there are some that are working all the time that you don't know about until later one of these rules gets revealed and you go, oh, that explains what I saw before a long time ago, and that makes sense now, because nothing contradicts it. Mm-hmm. It's like with character building, you can introduce new traits as long as they don't contradict. You can build and add dimensions, and if you can reveal them over time instead of all right away, it's always, I think, more rewarding that way.
Yeah.
That's tricky but fun. Anyway.
Very fun.
It's really hard if you can do that with a character or a story and you haven't written these rules first to begin with. So Stewie is his name?
Mm-hmm.
They probably didn't know anything about him other than that he was angry when they made him.
Yeah, they thought
now you're restricted.
Right.
You can come up with more traits, but it's going to be harder to do that in a way that makes sense and doesn't contradict the way he's been. And that's hard.
Well, and for that show, they do a lot of cool thing. Frankly, a lot of their characters are well-written characters. They have like... They basically built their character and then they said, we can break almost every other rule, but this character has to be this character kind of thing. And that's the whole point of the show, is they break all the rules. They cut to different times. They just had an episode where for some reason, it's not explained why, but you just like, of course, this show is that way. But like Quagmire and Peter Griffin, they switch underwear and then it becomes apparent that their personalities were in their underwear. And so then Quagmire starts being stupid and oafy like Peter, and Peter starts being just like a sex addict. It's very silly. And like the whole episode, like you get like, okay, of course that's a rule in their world, because they can break all the rules, you know, and that's why that show is fun. But those characters are good characters because they stand up. You're like, yeah, that character would do that. And it's especially fun to write a character that whose rules is they don't have rules. You know, and then just see where they go.
I think it'd be fun to act in something and do a character that somebody wrote and then try to make it your own. And then hopefully the writer goes, I did not expect that. I never thought of that.
Yeah, but that's true.
But that's him.
Yeah.
Inversely, I don't know if this would happen, but it'd be, I think it'd be rewarding to be a writer and write some character you really care about and you think he's perfect or she's perfect, whatever. And then you have an actor come in and do it and you go, that is not at all, or not, that's just not what I imagined, but it's great. And I love that now.
Yeah.
That'd be like kind of hard to let that go. But if you can be in a place either way where you're ready to let this thing evolve and it turns into something better, that must be a magical thing.
Yeah.
I'd like to be a part of that on either end.
I tell you what, there's a, I'm thinking now of a character that's specifically so good that nobody, like people have been hired to play him, but nobody's been able to pull it off. And so they just have not made a movie.
It's not there's Joker, is it?
No, no, no. There's,
can I get a hint?
No, you won't know this character.
Okay, all right.
So there's a book, there's authors that they write collaboratively. Their names are Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child. And they write a series, a whole chronicles of events that surround a character they call Aloysius Pendergast. And you can basically imagine kind of Batman mixed with Sherlock Holmes, mixed with, I don't know, like a Southern sort of rich person, but quiet. It's a very interesting character. And
this,
like,
isn't the Circle books, is it?
No, this is
okay.
They call it the Pendergast series, I guess. And they're still writing them, but it's my favorite book series I've ever read, just because the character is so interesting and you believe that this person is basically highly competent in everything they do. They're a super genius and they're obsessed with, basically everything. They know all this stuff, but because they know a lot and they've experienced, it's kind of 007 mixed with those guys too, because they're kind of in the freelance business of solving terrible crimes and stuff. It's very cool. It's my favorite character ever written. And they did a movie off of their first book with that included that character called The Relic back in, we watched that movie, but Relic, they wrote this book with this character in it. And he's like a key part of that movie, but they specifically could not find anyone to play that character. And so they just said, well, we got the budget to write this movie. We're going to do it because it's going to get us, it's a movie. Like that's our best chance to sell our books.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have to just risk getting rid of the character because no actor can play this guy. And so they rewrote the entire Relic book for the movie screen. And the movie was fine. It was like a campy 90s movie. And you horror watched movie. It with me recently. Yeah. And the story part generally holds up. It's, it's a special effects from the 90s. So it's a little silly, but
it's hard to,
but the book is so much better because that character is, that's when you first are introduced to the character and he's so much mystery surrounding him. And the best part of that character is there's so many rules about this character that are not revealed until much later.
Yeah.
And so as you get to know the character more, you're like, he's that awesome. And like, anyway, it's, they also got those authors got contacted to do a show and they got approved by, I think it was Showtime. It was like a big recording channel, or not channel, but studios. Like a studio basically hired and said, we want to do your show and we want to do it the way you want to do it. And they tried finding an actor for him again, and again they couldn't find one. So they ended up canceling it.
That sucks.
I know. I was so excited too. But that's knowing the character.
The Avatar show. You can do it the way you want to do the Avatar. It's better. Then they changed their mind and the studio got greedy and said, they're sticking all this stuff. And now the show is not going to be what they wanted. And then they backed out. And that happens to a lot of shows.
Yeah, it does. Well, what's interesting about that one, though, is that both the writers and the studio agreed. We both want to do it because it's an amazing story, but we cannot find an actor to play this guy.
That's like Quentin Tarantino's movie Inglourious Basterds.
Mm-hmm.
The character of Hans Landa, the Nazi Jew hunter dude.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't find a guy, and they thought we're never gonna be able to find a guy, and they couldn't find a guy to do. The main restriction was all the languages, which is hard enough.
Yeah.
But then to have those characteristics, it's a lot to ask in one person. They got lucky; they just found the guy. Like, I think on their last audition or something. Crazy story, but like, I remember when I first saw, I was like, where do they find this guy? He's got so many things that he can do anyway, so it's really hard to fill in, because some of it you can fake you know, in a film, like in post, you can't really, really fake being able to speak multiple languages, for example. So
that's
you,
one of
when
the
you see a performance like that and you see not just a good performance, but in some ways a rather extraordinary person, it's like, wow. So yeah, I can't imagine how discouraging it'd be to have this awesome character. It's like, but we'll never see anyone pull this off. So when you get close, like with Christoph Waltz is his name. It's super awesome.
He's awesome. Christoph is great. There's a, that specifically one is one of the things about Pendergast's characters that he speaks like a lot of languages and he goes all these places and he fits in basically anywhere, but he fits in that he knows how to fit in, but his character is actually has albinism. So he's also, they have to look a certain way. Like they have to have like white hair and, you know, and his character just, that's what his character is. And so everyone was like, well, we could sacrifice the albinism if we could find a guy who can both be like a Southern gentleman who has all the sophistication of that kind of character, but also is like physically athletic enough and mentally like fast enough to actually be believable in a brilliant, you know, like a genius person's, you know,
yeah,
you know, anyway, his like canter or whatever they'd call that, his
cadence, not candor.
Well, yeah, I can't remember the word, but basically his characteristics. It's such a cool character. I recommend those books highly. There's especially what they call the Diogenes trilogy, which is about the character's evil brother, and it's great. It's really well written. The lore behind the family is super interesting, and yeah, I can't give much away. There's all kinds of.
Was it called again? Pendergast?
It's by Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child. That's how you'll find them. But there's a bunch of books now. I've read many of them, and they're all good. That's some of the. It's definitely like I was a huge fan of the Sherlock Holmes books, and I think they stand up. Like they still hold up is what I'm trying to say. They're very good, and the mystery you're the whole time you're like, what is the answer to that? And these books capture the spirit of that in a way that I haven't read other books capture, and they're more interesting because I think, frankly, Pendergast is a better character than Sherlock. Like Sherlock is a great character too, frankly. I mean, he's just a good character. But what's awesome about in the instance of Pendergast, why I'm staying on this character is because I think he's one of the best characters written, is another thing that accents how good of a character he is they put him paired up with this cop a lot. And this cop is sort of your rugged, you know, he's a sergeant now, but he just is sort of pissed off because he hates his job and his ex-wife is always hounding him for stuff. And so you get this like sort of crass New York guy paired up with the Southern gentleman. And this guy is like, I don't know why you're friends with me kind of thing. It's great. Cause Pendergast loves this cop for no reason, but he's all quiet. And he just, why don't you come to me down to this? And then he takes him out to all these crime scenes and all this crazy shit is happening. And meanwhile, this cop's like, why is this guy my friend? Like, it's just interesting. The two of them together make a great pairing. Everybody, even though this character, the cop character, kind of sucks, he's just kind of a downer and you just kind of annoyed and mean and very business oriented. You end up really liking his character just because of how he plays with the great character of Pendergast. It's great. It's, yeah. Anyway, what are you thinking?
I have nothing to add to that. I've never read the books.
I know. I just, you know, sometimes another character accents how good a character could be. It was kind of like that example I was saying earlier of Bertrand and the other gal from Critical Role, and how it's like maybe by themselves they weren't outstanding as a character, but you pair them up with somebody, even if they're not opposites. Like you don't have to have opposites. You just have to have different. Mm-hmm. And some difference play together perfectly. There's some of that with like your, you know, Sherlock and Watson. There's some of that. They're just different enough that you're like, yeah, that's interesting. But like, they're not so different because they're kind of culturally the same. I think that's why I like the pairing of Pendergast and D'Agusta is his name. He's the cop from the Relic movie that we watched. He plays, that's him. The reason they play well together is because they're so different. The only thing they have in common is they like solving crimes, basically. Mm-hmm. But like one of them is younger and not renowned and refined at all, and the other one is like knows all this crazy secret stuff about the world, but keeps it to himself, and he's a badass, but you know, would never show it. And anyway, it's super cool. There's a deeper lore. What I like about that book series is that there's a deeper sort of the universe in that world is the real world, but there's like a deeper, there's almost like a magic sort of feel to it, because there are some kind of extraordinary things that happen, and then you learn that, you know, there's generally they can generally explain it naturally, but it's sort of fringe science. It's not really. Anyway, not unlike the show Fringe, another show with a great character. Have you seen Fringe?
Nope.
Do you have, so you know the guy who plays Denethor in Lord of the Rings?
His name is,
oh, what's his name? John?
I do not know what his name is.
Oh, it's going to come to me. I literally had it like 2 seconds ago. His name, that he plays a character in the show Fringe, which is a show about mystery solvers who solve fringe science mysteries. All this crazy stuff is happening, like people, you know, like people being born and then growing old instantly, or, you know, just stuff like that is happening, and they're solving all these crimes, and there's like a malevolence behind them. And there's a character, his name is Dr. John Noble, and he basically is a crazy guy. Mm-hmm. But he's a scientist, and he's always studied fringe science. So he just knows a bunch about all this crazy science stuff, and they basically have to work with him even though he's crazy. John Noble, that's his name. Denethor is from Lord of the Rings, the father who talks like this. Anyway, Boromir. But he plays this crazy old man scientist, and it's very silly. Like he just has quirks, like, I want a root beer, and he talks about stuff. Oh, my mic gave up.
No, your mic became flaccid.
Entirely. This sucks.
It got turned off. That pun almost worked.
Yeah.
Not really.
Here, you talk while I fix this.
It elected to become unerected.
I think I got it.
No, I'm out of puns anyway.
But he plays a character. His name is Dr. Walter Bishop. And he's great.
Of course he is. All the Walter characters are great.
Yeah. Walter White, Walter Bishop, Walter Riffick. It's a great character.
It's funny you say that. It is, Walter Riffick technically is a character.
I know. I know he is. I know you're like, he's a character. A Walter Riffick character. Yeah. Oh my
gosh. Why does that sound so retarded when you say that? He's a Walter Riffick character.
It sounds like something you'd hear in a kid's show.
He sounds like dumb or pandering.
That's a Walterific time here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it. Yeah. Other great characters. I'm specifically thinking about,
I want to think of a character and why he's great. And the reason he's great or good, or is like there's a specific reason that makes him different. His greatness comes from some weird thing. I don't know. Like, you said the character Denethor, that when I saw that actor in that movie, some place I've seen him, I was like, he has an intensity in his eyes and his speech and everything, and I want to see him do something else. Mm-hmm. He's great at that. Like, I may have seen something like that, but that's just stood out to me. So is there any kind of, it can be an actor, I guess, but a character where you're like, this character is great and unique is what I'm looking for.
I bet you'd like the show Fringe, by the way. You should watch that if you want to see more Denethor. He's awesome in that show.
I bet.
It's an interest. It's actually, I really like that show. It's in my top, definitely my top five of all time. Mm. All the episodes are engaging. Some of that, you know, there's fillers there, but they're all interesting and a little disturbing. So it's a good show.
I'd have to look at my movie wall to just kind of look, point, and think, this guy.
I'll tell you what, we watched one with an awesome character days ago.
Before you say that, you won't forget.
Yeah.
We both like this little movie called The Drop, starring Tom Hardy.
Oh, yeah.
And there's nothing horrendously remarkable about Tom Hardy's character, which I think is why he's great.
Yeah.
He's literally... His character is an average Joe type of a guy. That is his character. Mm-hmm. He's a nobody, which is great.
Yeah,
because it is a nobody, but he's got his little quirks, mm-hmm, a little bit, and just enough to make him stand out or likable. Mm-hmm. Like Rocco, I made you a safe place. Like that part, we just love it. I don't know. He's like soft and mellow. Anyway. Well, nothing remarkable about him, but ironically, that's what makes him unique or great, and that's why I think that's why we like him.
Well, I would argue that and like he's an example of a character who's great because of the circumstance they're into and how they stand out.
The character is only ever great because of the story they're in.
Right. I mean, but if you put him,
else, I'll love him.
No, well, I would argue
Put him in a Marvel's Avengers. And I like that guy.
Yeah, but I don't think it works the same way. Cause like,
That character that better suits the character.
He stands out from the crowd of the Boston bar in which he lives and all the, you know, the mobsters in that area. That's why, cause he's different from them. Like, and that's why he's like a regular Joe, but in a place where people are not regular. It's like that they're all kind of,
you know, I get it. It crusted elevates him and hardened all that. Characters. Saying,
yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, go back to the movie.
To be fair to that character, he's not just an average Joe either. Like he is average in his demeanor, but he ends up being cool because of like choices he's made too that you wouldn't know. It's like a little bit.
There's more to his character,
right?
You find that later.
So I think it's not I don't know that you can make an average Joe be a great character.
Whatever. That's just how I described him generally to the people without spoiling it.
Well, now go to the. Do you agree or disagree with that? I'm just curious what you think. That's my theory. I don't know if you can make an average.
Some characters work better in some stories than others, of course.
Yeah.
But I mean, a great character, you'll like them. You'll be happy to see him anytime. That's all I'm saying. Like if Zuko showed up and Kim Possible, like, how's he going to interact with them? I can't wait. You know, like I'm not going to be like, you don't belong here. Like, I love you. I don't care what you do. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's important. You're about to talk about what we just recently watched.
Oh, I was just making, it was kind of a joke, but we watched the Riddick movies.
Well, the first two. There might be four.
I don't know.
But let's just pretend there's three. We watched the first two.
Well, we watched Pitch Black and then we watched The Chronicles of Riddick. And Riddick is a great character.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think he's actually a good character.
He's a good character.
I wouldn't say he's great, though.
Huh. So I've seen the two movies. Well, aside from, I may have seen them before when I was little or something, but let's just assume I've seen them once. I have this gnawing feeling that there's an inconsistency with him. I haven't thought about it really hard. My first impression is he seems to be led by or motivated by circumstance, which annoys me. It's like, this person is missing. I'm going to go find them, even though I just said I don't care about you. I found them. Now they're dead, and now I'm going to go avenge you. I don't know. It seemed like...
Do you want me to tell you?
Sure. Well, I don't care if you spoil these movies. They're old.
They're old.
And they're not like heavily plot-based anyway. No.
They're not great movies.
Thriller, action, horror, whatever.
Movies. They're eye candy. It's just, they're not even great junk food movies, and they're fun.
Anyway.
But like his whole thing is that he's what happens when you put a good, competent man and then you fill him with rage. Like, and it's not by his doing. Cause his like whole thing is that all of his people were eradicated except for he survived and he was sort of not cursed, but he was imprinted with the anger of their whole people. And so his natural state is rage, but deeper than that, like he's naturally a good person. And so he's kind of like Hellboy in that sense. It's like the idea is that the rage of his whole people magically endowed him with their power, their rage, except for that he's kind of like his natural state is fighting that. That's why he ends up, you know, going back and helping kids and stuff. And, you know,
he's dueling natures.
Yes. He kind of is like that, but in his default, he's just, you know, an angry dude. He just wants to beat everybody up and kill people and stuff.
If you give a crap, he's a man, a few words, tough guy, muscly dude who's like quiet and has his one-liners
and a badass
and then kicks your ass. That's basically what he is. But he's likable because his lines aren't too stupid.
No. They're not. They're there's one or two campy ones in there because it's campy movies.
It's right in. It's right on the edge of campy fun. Campy dialogue.
I would call those movies campy.
I'm about to sneeze. I can gauge it by how predictable the lines are going to be before they happen. And there's a few that like he's going to say this, he says it. But when he doesn't say something that I'd expect and that makes sense, that's funny, then I'm pleased.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So he was right on the edge of acceptability.
Yeah, permissible campy.
Speaking of campy characters, I watched some YouTube videos on a show that we like that not people know about, which is Buzz Lightyear of Star Command.
Yeah.
I watched some videos talking about or showing Zurg and stuff, and I was like, man, Zurg is just such a great freaking character.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot what I was going to get into. Oh, yeah. So Zurg is a good balance between campy, but also, what's the word? Not threatening, but to where you, oh, he's a threat because he can do this and this and this. Anyway.
Yeah.
It's hard to judge children's show characters because they're so simple.
Yeah.
But generally. I mean, I'm a grown child, so it doesn't really count. But if you can make a show that's great for kids like Avatar, but also adults can appreciate it, that's like you've done excellent.
Yeah.
You appeal to so many people is really hard.
Well, and that is interesting that like it is a child show quirk or a
trope.
Yeah, trope is a better word. It's a child show trope that the bad guy is like just competent enough to be a threat, but he's mostly a buffoon. Like that's Dr. Draken.
Let's laugh at the bad guy.
Right. That's Draken. That's Zurg. There's a lot of that. Or like even freaking the guy who's the bad guy in Dexter's Lab, or the guy who's the bad guy in Fairly Odd Parents. And you like that guy, whatever his name is.
And Doofenshmirtz from Phineas and Ferb.
Yeah, Doofenshmirtz is like that. They're basically all the bad guys are a little bit. Because buffoonery is sort of nullifies the intensity, but they have to, there is a threat to them, but they have to have it nullified for kids. So it's not scary.
Otherwise he wouldn't be enjoyable.
Like, well, it'd be a little too scary. And that was like why a lot of people were impressed when Avatar The Last Airbender created enemies that were largely pretty threatening and also not ridiculous. There were ridiculous parts with some of the bad guys, but it was usually after they were defeated kind of thing.
So it's really impressive because they were able to make villains that were threatening, but they did nullify them.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how they did it. The humor, buffoonery, comedy happens around them or because of them, but it's not them.
Yeah.
So you laugh at Zuko will say something trying to be mean, but it comes off funny to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Or Azula, the other villain, like the Ty Lee girl is a comedic relief.
Yeah.
Something that she does is funny to us, even though she's being totally serious. That's smart.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's quite a feat to make actual threatening characters in a kid's show that don't threaten you too much.
Mm-hmm.
But they are.
I was even thinking.
Serious.
I was like, generally like that. I was even thinking of the Fire Lord. Like he's
straight up, straight up comedy. Evil.
You know, but he's not funny. Now the comedy happens. You know, like I'm still alive, and he falls back down, and it's silly. You know, they obviously silly things happen. But he by himself is not. It's only like when things, you know, I don't know, things happen.
There's
to
a couple
them.
Other things about that. So when we had the play episode, which. They basically did a caricature of the villain, which gave us a way to see him or perceive him as something less than. And I think more importantly, we got very little of him in the end.
Yeah.
So he was intense, but we got a small dose.
Yeah.
So that made it okay.
Yeah. It was it is interesting. They definitely ventured out with their portrayal of a bad guy in a kid's show. Cause I can't think of another kid's show where the bad guy is taken seriously.
Yeah, well,
at least kinda, totally seriously.
I kind of wish I knew about more kid shows.
Yeah.
So I could say, here's a great, but.
Yeah. I'm thinking other Nickelodeon shows right now. Like there's Jimmy Neutron. Who is the bad guy in Jimmy Neutron?
I have no
Cindy?
Idea.
Cindy?
I have no idea.
Or like Vicky from Fairly Odd Parents, like Vicky. And then
I didn't see that show. Or
really?
No, there's a lot of shows I've never seen, but I know about
Plankton and SpongeBob. Like he's silly too, and he's not really threatening.
There are no villains. He's got his antagonist friend Squidward, which it's not really.
Yeah, but Plankton's kind of he's the antagonist.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Plankton. Yeah, he's
that's why I said but he's Oafy too.
Super.
Yeah.
Super campy Oafy villain.
Yeah. Shoot.
I don't know enough kid shows. We're probably not going to come up with one that has a better intense villain than Fire Lord Ozai from Avatar.
So. Right. Danny Phantom. They had a bunch of, like, Danny Phantom was an interesting kids show too, is because they created a new villain basically every week, unless they did repeat villains. But they had a lot of villains in that one because his whole thing was fighting the villains. And so they had to do a job of creating a lot of villains and somehow have them threatening and somehow, you know. And they didn't do a bad job, if I remember right, but most of them, they had some sort of quirk or something dorky about them.
Most shows do that. I think it's fun when you come up with a bunch of different foils for your hero. Mm-hmm. Impossible is one we keep thinking of. There were different villains besides Draken.
Right.
Some of them were great. Some of them were okay. Mm-hmm. But they all had their angle.
See, I think the thing about Kim Possible was... Like, obviously, Draken's whole thing is he's kind of oafy, but there's just enough to be like, oh, he could be a threat, though. And mostly it's because of Shigo, frankly. But I remember watching the movie, the Kim Possible movie, when he's actually kind of a threat. And I remember thinking, Dad, that doesn't really seem... Or I don't remember how many movies there are. But
there's two Kim Possible movies.
Well, whatever movie, like... Whatever movie where he's more serious.
The first one's Time Monkey. The second one is So the Drama.
Oh gosh! Whatever one where
happy just thinking about him. Well, the one where
they take over Bueno Nacho. That's, or whatever.
The second one, So the Drama.
Yeah. So the Drama. Okay, so
that one is like, oh, he gets really close to his goal, kind of thing. Like he's successful, and like, oh, the stakes are high because he's actually doing this.
And I remember watching that one, and in parts being like, that doesn't seem like him anymore because it's too like. It's too threatening. Now, of course, they save it by the end. But I disconnected from that movie more than I did most of the show because I was like, but it's not him, really. Because his whole thing is that he doesn't succeed. He's supposed to kind of fail.
I remember how striking it was to me, too. But I understand as an adult, at least, you have to do that. You have to raise the stakes and get to that point by the third act and all that. So,
yeah.
It does seem strange. It's like a different Draken than the show Draken, though. It's all, in that way, it feels like out of character. It's a different character. But I understand for a movie, you kind of... Otherwise, you're going to have a long show episode, which doesn't work like a movie does. Whatever.
Yeah, it's sort of like the whole Steppenwolf and whatever his name
is.
Man,
I hate that. I hate
in
movies or games when you have the mini-boss who takes the place of the boss the whole time.
Yeah.
So the whole time you're dealing with the mini boss, whatever, you don't give a fuck about him because you know he's just in the way of the real problem.
Right.
And so he feels like a waste of time and you can never see him as a threat. He's just annoying in any story he's in.
Right.
That'd be a fun exercise. Yeah.
He's a MacGuffin. Kind of. He's a McMuffin. Steppenwolf.
Can you think of a mini boss? What's what I'm going to call it?
That's a good word for it.
In any...
That's kind of how Ultron was, too.
He's a sub-boss. Ultron was the villain of that one.
I know,
Can you think of a mini boss in a movie where like that's a great mini boss and he needed to be there? Because I can't think of any. There probably is one. Sub villain, what do you call it? Step villain.
No, I can in the scenario where the mini boss is cool the mini boss is there because it's cool. Like I can think of the first one I thought of was in Transformers, like the first Transformers, when they encounter like the scorpion looking Transformer in the sand, and you're like, dang, I know that's not the big bad guy, but he's so like scary and it feels real.
That is cool, but I mean specifically a mini boss who acts like the boss, but he's not the boss. So Steppenwolf acts like the boss. He takes the place of where the boss should be, has the dialogue, and is the threat to the protagonist. So in Transformers, the scorpion is a thing they got to fight. It's not the thing they have to fight.
Well, it is ultimately. I think the thing with Steppenwolf, the reason it's obvious that he's a MacGuffin in this scenario is because he's actively subservient during that movie. Like if in that whole movie there was no mention of Darkseid,
that would have been okay.
Then it would have been like, oh, he's the big bad guy.
Yeah, but, and that's why I'm annoyed.
Through the whole thing, he's just, oh, I'll help you with whatever you want, Darkseid. He's kind of scared of him. It's like, you've just shown your weakness, you know?
I just thought of a good example of a whatever.
Go ahead.
Darth Vader. In the three movies. First movie, he is the villain. That's why it's okay. Because in the second movie, you realize, oh, there's someone above him, Darth Sidious, in that hologram.
Yeah.
Like, it gets deeper than you know. I think if you had Sidious in the first movie with Darth Vader, at the very least, would be less of a threat.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, like you said, don't even say that there's a villain above, because that just takes it away.
Yeah.
There would have been a way to, for example, in the one movie, Justice League, maybe you could have had Steppenwolf the whole time until maybe the last third. And then you introduce, oh, there's someone above him. Shit.
I think if it's the very last thing you do in a movie, like a post-credit scene or something, that's great. Avengers did that all the time. And
like with Thanos, they showed there's someone else above Ultron or whatever, and just a bigger threat. Yeah, oh, Loki.
Right.
I showed it's Thanos. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
That's okay, but yeah.
But through the whole movie, you're just giving away that you're the weaker. Like, you're not as strong as you could be. If you think this is the biggest threat through the whole movie, then you're immersed in the whole, in the risk of it all, or the threat of it
that's
all.
That's actually a good example, too. So, the first and second Avengers movies, assuming that you don't know Thanos exists, assuming you haven't read the comics, whatever, they're structured okay. Now, I don't know if this is the case. I think so, though. Post-credit scene of the first Avengers movie, after Thor is the villain, we see Thanos. I think he says, fine, I'll do it myself. That's when you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Now imagine how shitty Avengers would have been if several times we kept cutting to Loki talking to Thanos, and I'm going to serve you, Thanos. And
or Thanos, even Thanos like, watching.
Or whatever. Just we know that the whole time that Thanos is the real villain. I'd be annoyed watching, like, okay, get Loki out of the way.
Yep.
So there's a way to do it, and it is not to show the whole time that the protagonists are fighting your mini boss, that there's a bigger boss waiting for you to kill his mini boss. It's just annoying.
Yeah.
It's like busy work, which is what MacGuffins are. They're kind of, they can be busy work. I shouldn't say they are.
I'll tell you what, though. That's another, I'm going to tie this back to D&D because we're kind of on that topic. But in Dungeons & Dragons, there's this thing that happens. And this is another example of, like, if you do a good job with your mini boss, they have like all the anxiety wrapped up with them in the world. Like, how are they going to beat this? And then the moment when the real boss hits, it's like, oh shit. Moment.
Yeah.
Like, and if you do your story right, then the moment when you see Thanos, it should be, oh shit. Like, they could have done that better, frankly. Like, if you can imagine what would happen if maybe Loki very close to beats everybody. And they don't get beat, just barely. But
which
then just before
happened.
It's over.
Technically, they just beat him.
Yeah. But you can imagine how, like,
the stakes are raised much and how intense this villain is.
Well,
and
wait, because I'll say in the scenario. So the scenario is Loki just really took it to you. He almost beat you, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then just at the last minute before you think you're going to beat Loki, then Thanos shows up.
And
you're like, oh shit. Like, that would have been a more oh shit moment.
Yeah.
That happens a lot in D&D, and that's my favorite thing about it. It's like, wow, just when you think they're going to have a tough time with this guy, then the guy shows up and you're like, oh no, you know?
I'm certain that's happened before. If you happen to think of an example where you've barely almost just beaten your villain, and then before you've beaten him, the real villain shows up and you're like, oh shit. I'm sure that's happened, but that's the opposite of what?
It's actually in Infinity War. That's kind of that one. They finally beat the army or whatever, and they're about to do it, and then Thanos shows up, and he's about to get the last rock, and you're like,
That kind of is that. It's like, our force is already freaking beat.
Yeah.
And now you're sending the actual villain, like, they're screwed.
Yep.
And, well, in that scenario, they are screwed. They do lose, which is great.
Yeah.
But
it's awesome.
I'm certain there's a situation where, analogously, the Avengers fought the army, then Thanos shows up, and they have no way of winning, and they win, and despite all odds, and it's great.
Yeah.
Maybe it happened in Lord of the Rings. Maybe, whatever. That's hard to. It's rewarding when you see it happen, if it ever happens, but it's very hard to make believable.
Yeah. Technically, in Lord of the Rings, it does have that. It's like in the first 10 minutes, though. It's then when victory was nigh. Sauron, you know, and he shows up and he's got his mace and he starts fucking people up. So that's like your oh shit moment in Lord of the Rings. It's like, it actually happens before the events of Lord of the Rings.
Before we get invested, though. But it's story-wise, yeah. But then they lose, though. They do lose. Yeah. So, I mean, like, a situation where Sauron shows up there and then they win anyway.
Well,
and
good stories.
And you feel rewarded.
Yeah. I mean, if you think of the best story of all time, archetypically, a lot of people would say,
it's Despite All Odds is the best story.
Right. Well, despite
or
losing.
Underdog is the other way of saying it.
Yeah.
Those are the best ones.
I mean, I would argue the best story of all time, it doesn't have to be a fake story, it could be a true story. I think the best story of all time is like Christ coming and dying for people voluntarily, you know?
That one is, that's people. All of that's that. Like it's the underdog, quintessential story. That's despite all odds.
And he technically loses. Like, I think losing is part of the best story. So, like, the reason that Avengers
sequel,
stands out.
His sequel, he comes back.
Yeah.
The Bible 2. Jesus is back, and he's pissed.
Yeah.
I saw that in a meme picture once. I thought it was the funniest thing I ever saw. The Bible 2. Just that made me laugh on his face. Anyway,
I think that's why Avengers is so outstanding in people's minds, because for all intents and purposes, you lost.
Yeah.
You know, Star Wars was kind of that way, too.
Yeah,
like Luke gets captured, and then the Death Star is blowing stuff up.
In the end of the second one,
mm-hmm.
Empire Strikes Back, whatever. So
which is
why people called Infinity War the Empire Strikes Back of Marvel, because they lose. And
yeah, and I mean that Marvel did a really good job with that. That was how you
all
do
things
that.
Considered, mainly because you have so many characters to juggle. But I want to get into that.
Yeah, I think that the best stories you have to lose. Like in life, the best stories you have to lose.
Hey, you want to hear something really cool? My therapist said once that I remember just stuck in my head. Like I'm going to remember that forever.
Yeah.
I don't think he realized how profound it was, at least to me, because he just said it in passing among other things. I was like, he said, I don't want to get it wrong.
Yeah.
It's 5 words. Not all sacrifices are losses.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's simple, but also profound.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's great.
It's good. So I should make a movie.
Yeah. Well, that's how it works. Is quintessentially, there's the archetype of that is the, what is the Greek god who he loses and he cuts off his arm? But he saves the world, or I can't remember what that is. It's like
that's Christ dying on the cross,
right? Right. I just didn't want to say use the same.
Yeah, you want to
example
use the same
again.
Story. This is the one good story that has all the good stuff in it.
It technically does. So I mean,
it's like the best story that there is, really.
And all the other best stories emulate that story.
Right, yeah.
That's why to me, it's
J.K.
the best
Rowling
story.
Said that when she wrote Harry Potter, that elements of her story are based on the Christ story.
Which yeah.
I heard that, I was like, oh yeah. Thinking about this. Yeah, I get it. Harry Potter dying and all that.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's a good source material, so I can't get mad.
Yep.
And you know a good story when you hear it. Anyway.
Lord of the Rings is kind of like that too, obviously. It's the idea is that like the, the Christ character, he carries the burden of sin and he has to, in all intents and purposes, you have to destroy that. You have to destroy that in you. A lot of people thought, Frodo needed to throw himself in the fire at the end of that book, because they thought that would be the perfect ending. Because like you actually have to say, you're tied to what's wrong with you. And I still like that the ring was something he could separate from himself, but it was hard. Like that was the thing about that one that made
they
it
made it really
real.
Hard.
They did.
He actually failed,
right?
And someone intervening is what saved him. His best friend, which is the better part of him in some way.
Yep.
So if there was a way for him to be separated and win, that was the best way that I could think of, and I don't know if I would have thought of that, but anyway, which is what makes it a bit more rewarding.
Well, and it's also kind of, in some sense, what happens in people too. Like the only way for you to beat
what
you've got going is to be saved by someone else, and that's probably why it resonates with people that Samwise is sort of representative, of, I guess, the cry of Christ or of God kind of thing. I don't know. You could draw parallels endlessly.
Mm-hmm.
I do like the idea, like in Harry Potter, with the fact that he's a Horcrux and that he actually has to die to kill that part of him, and he has to be resurrected somehow.
I love that.
Yep, there's it's literally the story of Christ bearing all your sins and sacrificing himself on the cross, paying that. They all are that. All the best stories are that. Iron Man. I mean, freaking Iron Man did it. He literally held all the stones.
Okay, like, I thought you meant the Iron Man movie. I was like shaking my head thinking, no, Iron Man is not like Christ. He's the opposite.
Well, no,
at the end of Infinity War. I thought you meant the Iron Man movie.
Iron Man character.
Okay, but I thought you meant the Iron Man film from 2008. I was like, no, he is not.
No.
Anyway, aside from that joke ending, I think that's a good ending. Speaking of endings, remember I said... McGregor or MacGuffin syndrome.
Yeah.
I looked it up. Munchausen syndrome. You've heard of that? Munchausen
syndrome.
Yeah, I have
heard that.
Okay, that's what I was trying to say. Not that that's related anymore, because this episode was about good characters and good stories.
Yeah.
Mostly good characters. Yeah.
All right, well, I guess we are done.
Done for all time, because I've said it, and it's I ruined it. So
you're the boss, daddy.
Hey, thank you guys for listening.
Go home.
Go home.
Yeah, go home.
Stop it.